Good afternoon, Sister Dyer. Good afternoon, all Kandaki Queenside listeners. I'd like to thank you all again for giving me this opportunity to speak a little bit more about my life as a young boy and my love of music in West London and all, some of the interesting events that surrounded that. Now, when I was about 7 or 8 years old, I used to notice that there were a few Jamaican gentlemen in the Notting Hill area that were extremely well dressed, better dressed than anybody else. They wore extremely tight fitting suits that were shiny. They had a kind of sheen to them, like they would shine two colours. They would wear crisp white shirts, braces, ties of different colours, usually with a gold tie clip. And they would also wear these hats that had a really narrow brim. And they very often had gold teeth as well, these fellas. And also they would have a gold tie pin. They looked amazing, to be honest with you. And they were also some of the most friendly people in the area. Now, quite often these gentlemen would, as is the custom in many countries where there's hot weather, a lot of the life takes place out on the street, the community life. Obviously in England, that doesn't happen so much with the English people because of our weather. But obviously with Italians, Jamaicans, people from warmer climates, you know, that's still what they do. Anyway, so I was only, as I say, extremely young. And these gentlemen in particular were always smiling and friendly. There was always people going up to them and shaking their hands, etc. They seemed to be especially popular for, I don't know, whatever reason. But they looked to me to be quite successful because of the way they were dressed. They were certainly a lot better dressed than other Jamaican people, and also better dressed than the English people. So they could often be seen standing outside where blues nights were starting. You know, usually in a basement flat, and they'd be standing out on the pavement as the ground was shaking. Now, I don't know if they were there to keep an eye out for the police, or whether they would take the money from people going to the club, or they were just standing outside for any other particular reason. But I later came to realise that I didn't realise this until probably about 1978, that these gentlemen were originally known as rude boys, extremely well-dressed gentlemen, gangster-type gentlemen from Jamaica that were employed by the sound system operators to guard their equipment and keep rivals away, because I later learnt there's a lot of violence surrounding sound system rivalry in Jamaica. Anyway, a few years later, I noticed that white men started wearing similar clothes to these gentlemen when they were going out for the evening. And these young boys, because I don't suppose any of them were any older than about 20, and they were mainly teenagers. But they would wear the short suits and look extremely smart when they were going for an evening out. And they were what became known in the media as skinheads. Now, they didn't give themselves that name. It was purely a media thing. I don't recall them actually calling themselves anything. I mean, I knew them as bother boys, and still do refer to them as that sometimes, because they had a reputation for violence and toughness because of the way they dressed. But I remember in those days that their violence was mainly directed at hippies and indeed rockers, you know, motorbike riders. And obviously that used to get maximum publicity in the press. Anyway, now I want to get back to the music, because that's what we're really here for. But skinheads originated from another subculture called mods. Now, mods were fans of early Motown, blue beat, and early reggae music. And so these original skinheads, quite a lot of them were mods to begin with. But a little bit later on, the mods became a bit more like hippies. And so the tougher mods, who regarded the hippies as a bit middle class, they were proud of being working class. So that they adopted the Jamaican mode of dress and the music a lot of which they had already been liking as mods. Anyway, so the skinheads were, they bought a lot of reggae music and they used to play it in their youth clubs, and they also used to be played in dance halls. And in fact, it became so popular that even the BBC couldn't ignore playing it in the end. So, and a lot of reggae artists, realising this, they even released a few songs that were deliberately directed at a skinhead audience, the most famous of which is by a band called Simmerip. It's called Skinhead Moonstomp. And now Simmerip, it's a peculiar name. It's actually the pyramids with the letters rearranged. That's probably for contractual reasons. But I remember another song called Skinhead Revolt, which was by Big Joe the Boss. But the people that put out the most skinhead-orientated records was Torpedo Records, which, as I said before, was owned by Eddie Grant. And I think there was one called Skinhead Train. That they released several titles on Torpedo Records, just as 45s. Now these records are worth an incredible amount of money. I would say in a beautiful condition, some of them would be about 200 euros. Anyway, also around about the same time, there was a subsidiary of Eyelid Records called Trojan Records. Now, they're responsible for most of the chart hits that reggae had in Britain around about the time, especially during the period of 1968, 69 and 70. And shortly after they had a chart hit, they would usually get all the best single releases and compile them and put them on compilation albums. One particular series that's very collectible and is the main part of my collection that I like the most was the Tighten Up albums, volumes 1 to 8. Now, the singles would only be out a short period of time and they would get put out onto these compilation albums. So you could buy, you know, about 10 singles really on one album at a very, very low price. And that would probably only be a few weeks before the singles would be put out on these records. So people used to just wait. Now, it's difficult to get these kind of records in really good condition because they've been taken to dance halls, youth clubs, taken around different people's houses. So anyone that's thinking of collecting 60s reggae records, bear in mind that the condition of them may not be that great. But so you just have to expect that if you do collect that kind of thing, that some of it's probably not going to be in that fantastic condition. I know some of my own collection isn't in that wonderful condition, but, you know, it's so rare, you just have to go with it, really. Anyone wishing to collect reggae from that period, I would like to draw their attention to the Trojan catalogue, where there are so many compilations on CDs and they have an incredible amount of tracks on each. I own several that I still play in the car. But of course, Pride of Place is my vinyl collection. But I can't play that because I don't have a record player at the moment, but I'm saving to try and get the best one I can. Anyway, thank you all for listening.